Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hey, guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Cousins on Crime, as heard on Crime Junkie, no big deal.
Yeah. Anyone else hear that?
we're okay. Like, we're totally chill about it all. Like, it's no big deal. Like, we're not, you know, like, I couldn't sleep last night, but that's okay, you know?
Yeah.
Just still buzzing off of it. Yeah, that was really cool that they mentioned us.
I know. Candace called me and I was like, screaming, what? And Chris is right next to me and he's laughing at me, not knowing what you're saying, but he can tell something exciting was happening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is so wild because Crime Junkie was like, back in like 2018, 2019. It was 2018 for sure. We started listening to Crime Junkie and we started like spiraling about their cases and their stories that they told. And we kind of were like, we should start our own podcast. And
yeah,
we just never felt, I guess, confident to do it. Or we just thought maybe there wasn't enough room in the true crime space. But yeah. So it was kind of inspiring for us to start our podcast. So it's amazing that they used our interview with Amber Cannon as a source for their episode.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of feels like big time, guys.
Feels big. Feels big. feels really, really big. So, in other news, the deer is up.
Yes. Hank the deer.
Hank is, be hanging.
Hank's head is hanging.
Yeah, it is. It's, yep.
Yeah. Isn't he beautiful?
Yeah. I'm glad he's faced the other way.
I thought you would appreciate that.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, he kind of looks like he's looking at me out of the corner of his eye. But
side-eyeing you. Yeah.
But it's also a look of like, I'm not looking at you, but I'm looking at you.
Yeah. He's like, I got my eye on you.
Mm-hmm.
So for 18 years now, Chris has begged to put a deer head on the living room wall. he has another one in the garage that I have refused. But you know, after 18
why? Years, is it just ugly?
No, it's a nice deer, but I didn't want a deer head in the living room.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now you have one.
Now I have one.
So you might as well move the other one in.
Yeah, Hank and Henry can.
Yeah, he's gonna melt out there in the garage.
Seriously,
literally, can they melt?
I don't know.
Can they decompose? I don't know what they treat.
Well, all the decomposing parts are out.
Right, but like his ears, his skin, like what's it treated with? Like, could it?
I don't know. Would you like me to
research
that?
I think I'm good.
Okay.
I think I'm good. Because
I can totally put it in another episode.
I will say that this Texas heat could decompose anything.
Mm, you are so right.
If you're not careful. It's
900 degrees outside.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So be careful. Stay inside for the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. And guys, put sunscreen on your arms.
Not just your face.
Like, I'm serious. Every time I get in my car, I remember to do it sometimes, but I got in my car to drive over here and my arms were ablaze. Like the sun
is... You got
a
tan just on your way here.
The sun was beating in. Mm. through the glass and frying my arms. I had the AC on.
Yeah.
My body was cool, but my arms were singeing.
Oh, no.
So.
I'm glad you made it over here.
Yeah.
Without.
Me too.
Decomposing. Yeah. And you brought me a lemonade from Chick-fil-A.
So. It was a celebration. We really need to go get some snow cones to celebrate.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably.
Yeah, that's.
In our future.
Yeah. Okay. I have a quick question before we even get into the, and it's rhetorical, really.
Go on.
So have you ever prayed for something so specific and you saw God answer it like right before your eyes? So I know a lot of times we pray and it feels like God isn't listening, or it takes like months or years to see an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, there was a time where it took 10 years for me to see God's plan and not what I felt like he wasn't answering my prayer. Anyway, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into all the details, but I had a situation this last week that I really had to pray about. And I prayed a very specific prayer that truth would shine. And it was like the next day that there was a very specific answer that I prayed for. And I just thought that was so cool.
That is cool.
Some may think it's a coincidence, but
that's okay. Yeah. You can believe what you want to believe.
Yeah, I do believe. And so I say that to say that I think that God is good, and I'm so thankful that he loves us. But bad things happen in our lives, but it's how we deal with them that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Romans 12:21 says, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." So with that, we'll get into our story. We'll be talking about Reshma James. There's not a lot about her case, so I want to shine some light on her beautiful face.
Okay.
In 2008, Reshma James was 24 years old. She was a nurse and was married to 27-year-old Joseph Palapurith. I don't know if I'm saying
that right.
Sounds
good to me.
Reshma was the only daughter of James, Joseph, and Mercy. She had married Joseph on August 25th of 2007, so just a year earlier than the event we're talking about. But the two of them met when his family placed a matrimonial advertisement for him.
Goodness.
So like an arranged marriage kind of thing. I'm not sure how the contact was made, but he really liked Reshma when he met her.
Okay. I got to pause. Do you know what the advertisement said?
No. I wish I could have found it, but I did not.
What do you think your advertisement would be? Your parents wouldn't need to put out an ad. My advertisement would be like a little bit crazy, but like
she knows what she wants.
Good once you get to know her. Please take ASAP.
Please send help.
Yeah. SOS.
No, but I would have liked to see that, to have seen that. So that's a good question. Anyway, her family, when they met him, was not so interested. Joseph says it was because they had already heard negative things about him, like he had behavioral issues. It seemed that Reshma, though, felt a connection to him as well, and as well as he did, and her family eventually came around. I guess she was like, I can see myself marrying this guy. I don't know. So they agreed. In January of 2008, after they married, the newlyweds flew to the United States to live in California. So they married in India.
Okay.
Reshma's family says that the marriage was never really blissful. The marriage struggled right from the beginning. It didn't take long for arguments to begin, which resulted in Joseph slapping Reshma and getting physical with her on several occasions.
Yikes.
Reshma arranged for the both of them to go back to India for about a month. She wanted to try to work things out with a counselor there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if she already had a counselor that she was familiar with or if they just was a family thing. I'm not sure. But so they were going to spend a month there and try to work things out. But counseling did not help.
Mm.
Joseph said her family started yelling at him when they arrived at the airport, and she left with them. So the counseling thing didn't get off to a good start in the first place.
Right.
He said a compromise meeting was arranged where her family insulted him again, and Reshma spoke against him, and the couple saw the counselor in Bengaluru, I think that's how you say it.
Okay.
That counselor suggested that they live separately for 6 months and try to work things out. Like maybe distance will make the heart grow fonder.
And also like their meeting wasn't exactly, they met, they fell in love. This was an arrangement and the foundation for their relationship really wasn't there. They just kind of started without a foundation.
Right. Right. You're right. An arrangement. And they, I mean, I guess they did both feel a connection when they met.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. No foundation.
And it always amazes me too. Like, I mean, you know, in our religion, it's you don't live together before you get married.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times what happens is, you know, you move in with this person who's now your husband.
Right.
And it's your first time living with the opposite sex. And it's like so weird.
Right.
Like they do things that really piss you off.
yeah. You've got to learn their whole mannerisms.
You have to learn how to live and coexist in the same home 24/7 and share things and share financial responsibilities, and that's huge.
Well, and not to mention she left her family in India to move to the United States with him.
Yes. So total culture shock on top of it all.
Yeah. I think she had been to the United States before. She had family already living in New Jersey.
Okay.
So, I mean,
just a lot of compounding factors coming together. That must have been so hard for her. And being away from her family, she probably felt really isolated.
Yeah. So Joseph said he still loved his wife, but he blamed her family for creating all these problems.
Mm.
Like, forget the behavioral issues that they knew about before the marriage. Like, it's all their fault.
Mm-hmm.
Reshma flew back to the United States alone without Joseph. She decided to separate from him, you know, like the counselor said, take 6 months.
And was he working in California?
Yes.
So he was there for his job and
Yes. She
went back.
Yeah. Okay. There was a couple of, one thing said he worked as a security guard. I don't know if that was in the past. One other thing said that he worked in the family business. I don't know what that was, but apparently, okay, he was doing something.
All right.
So she flew back to the United States and she made her way to New Jersey where her family was. On September 12th of 2008, she came and joined her cousin Sylvie Perrin-Cheryl. I hope I said that right. Sylvie was 47 years old. She had three grown children. She was a school nurse and the principal of the Sunday school program at the Clifton St. Thomas Syrian Orthodox Nanaya Church.
Whoa.
Mouthful.
Whoa.
The tight-knit Nanaya community is an ancient Christian sect with roots in the Middle East and southern India.
Okay.
So naturally, when Reshma went to stay with Sylvie, she started attending the church with her. It seems that the only time Joseph got to talk to Reshma was when she called him from Sylvie's home phone.
Okay.
When he would call her, the family would not give Reshma the phone.
Ooh. Yeah. She's in the shower. Yeah. She's indisposed.
Mm-hmm. She ain't, or she just ain't coming to the phone.
She don't want to talk to you.
Joseph then created an email in the name of a mutual friend to get in touch with Reshma. The emails show Reshma thinking she was talking to a friend and expressing no interest in Joseph.
Yikes.
Joseph says he was depressed and created a plan to move to Atlanta, Georgia. He bought a Jeep and he left Sacramento, California.
Okay.
But first, he decided he would drive to New Jersey to try to see Reshma and reconcile.
Because that's on the way to Atlanta from California.
No, it's not.
It's quite the detour.
Yeah. The morning of November 23rd of 2008, Reshma called her parents and her siblings at their home in India. They had a brief conversation and then she said, "I'll call you this evening." And she went to church with her family and friends. That same day, knowing that she would be at church, Joseph walked in the church building. It was close to the end of the service. There were about 200 members in the congregation. He approached Reshma during the service and tried to get her to walk out of the church with him, but she resisted. He yelled, "I'm here to take my wife. I have been without her for so long, and I want her back."
Oh, my.
At one point, Reshma went and took refuge behind Sylvie, and some of the church members tried asking him to be quiet and leave. Mm-hmm. A certain church member intervened and came to Reshma's aid. When Joseph grabbed Reshma's arm and started pulling her to leave the church, Dennis John Malusaril, he was 25 years old. He was a director of the Clifton St. Thomas Syrian Orthodox Nanaya Church. He was from India as well. His parents and other relatives came and settled in the United States. He was known for his vibrant personality and countless hours spent working with children. He helped in so many parts of the church. So this was just another thing that mm-hmm. he's like, not on my watch. Yeah. I'm helping.
Yeah.
So when Dennis approached and tried to help Reshma, Joseph asked her if she was going to come with him, and she told him no.
Oof.
He pulled out his revolver and started shooting.
Oh, my Lord.
He was armed with two handguns and had more than 100 rounds of ammunition in his vehicle.
Oh, my goodness.
A witness says there was a slight pause of approximately 10 to 15 seconds between the first shot and then multiple shots followed.
Whoa.
So he shot 5 times total.
Oh my gosh.
Killing Reshma and Dennis.
Oh my Lord.
He shot both of them in the head. One of the bullets also hit Sylvie in the head.
Oh no.
Sylvie survived, but she was in a coma, and when she woke up, she was left wheelchair bound.
Oh, no.
Joseph fled the church and would later be found and arrested at a motel in Georgia on November 24th, the day after the shootings.
Jeez.
Police found an address book with Joseph's personal belongings that included Sylvie's address and phone number, as well as the name and address of the church. Other evidence, such as cell phone data, showed that he had traveled from his home in California and stalked Reshma for a couple of weeks.
Jeez.
Joseph gave 2 statements to police, one in a video recorded statement made in Georgia and the other an unrecorded statement made to investigators on the return flight to Newark. He admitted to dumping both guns that he had, one of which was the murder weapon. Police did find both of those guns. He told them, "I was trying to leave, but then the guy came out." He says, "There's these two young guys come out trying to be Captain Save-A-Ho and start pulling her off." Yeah, he's just rambling in this confession. He said, "I pulled out my firearm and I said, 'Get the heck away, man.' They were pulling her back forcefully. I got pissed off. I don't know where I shot the first shot. I shot him, but then I don't know. She was right there too, but she dropped first. She dropped." He then goes on a tangent about how he hates his community and they messed up his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "I'm not saying I'm not perfect." I think he meant to say, "I'm not saying I'm perfect." Mm-hmm. but I, he says, "I was not aiming at her, but because of that man, she got shot and I just wanted to shoot whoever man."
Yeah.
He says, "Then I just wanted to shoot that man and I ran out of ammo." He says, "Man, I swear if I had a machine gun, I would have killed everybody."
Oh my Jesus.
I would have.
Yes, he would have shot.
Yeah. He says, "I would have massacred the whole church, man."
And so when you people think that machine guns are not the problem, just think like two people died as opposed to 50.
Right. Right.
So anyways,
I mean,
you were saying,
there's all kinds of aspects with that. I mean, yeah, the kind of person who owns that. And but yes, if he had that in his possession.
I mean, he came there clearly with an agenda.
Right.
I mean, you don't. The fact that he had two guns,
mm-hmm,
he didn't just have one gun happen to be on him. He had two right. weapons and a whole slew of ammo.
Yeah.
You don't have a whole slew of ammo in your car if you're just.
Right.
Going peacefully to it's have your wife.
Definitely
you.
Seems like he had a plan.
Yeah, definitely.
But he ends, well, I don't know if it's the end of the confession, but in the statements that I found, he says, "That's how much anger I had because I shot my wife."
Oof.
Lord. After the shooting, he threw the guns in a trash can, he says, bought cigarettes at a nearby shop. Mm-hmm. Went to New York City and boarded a bus for Texas.
All right.
He decided to go to get off of the bus in Baltimore and then took a taxi to Monroe, Georgia.
Good Lord.
He's like, what do I do now?
Made of money, apparently.
Yeah. At trial, there wasn't a question that Joseph was the one that shot the victims. There were plenty of witnesses. Yeah. He didn't even deny it. The issue was whether his conduct was purposeful and knowing, or did he commit the crimes in the heat of passion or by accident?
That old chestnut.
Mm-hmm. Joseph testified at trial, and he described the tensions of his marriage, which he attributed, again, to Reshma's family, and acknowledged that he had previously physically assaulted his wife. He admitted. He testified that Reshma called and told him that she was living in New Jersey with Sylvie. He believed Reshma was sad and being influenced against him by her relatives. Like, she didn't really want to leave me. Like, mm-hmm, her family was telling her to.
Right.
He admits in an effort to communicate with Reshma, he did create the email address and pretended to be a mutual friend. Reshma fell for the ruse and confided that she did not want to be with him. And he admitted he often responded to such statements. So when she's telling this, who she thinks is a friend, mm-hmm, "I don't want to be with him," he's like, well, in a threatening manner, he's like, "Well, you need to go back to him. He's dangerous. And, you know, if you don't go back to him,
oh,
he'll..."
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I guess he thought that would make her go back.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's so attractive.
Yeah. In the emails, Reshma repeatedly said she believed Joseph was going to kill her.
Oh, my gosh.
He admitted bringing two guns with him from California and purchasing 50 more rounds of ammunition in Wyoming on the way.
Goodness gracious.
For approximately 3 weeks prior to the shootings, he surveilled Reshma, observing her attending church at least on two occasions. He said that the morning of the shootings, he approached Reshma as she stood next to Sylvie and said, "I'm here to take you back with me." He grabbed Reshma's arm and insisted he was taking her with him. Joseph insists that Reshma began to leave the church with him. She's like, "Okay, I'll go." But Dennis intervened to stop them. He pulled out his gun and aimed it at Dennis, and the gun accidentally discharged.
Yeah.
And then he saw his wife fall to the ground. He says he then totally blacked out and lost all memory of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
No, you didn't.
Mm-mm. His videotaped statement was later used against him and was a little more dramatic from what he was telling the jurors. Remember, he said out of his own mouth, "I swear if I had a machine gun, yeah, I would kill everybody." This was not an accident. Right. There was no remorse.
Yeah.
The prosecution played a video of his initial confession where Joseph described stalking Reshma and confronting her. He says, "I went up to her and I was like, 'Reshma, I love you. I want you to come with me. And first of all, you never even gave me a chance.'" Anyway, so yeah, the defense argued that Joseph didn't intend to kill anyone. Despite the fact that he was fully armed and very angry. Joseph says he purchased both guns legally. He had worked in security. So he knew how to use guns. So,
okay, that's not a defense.
No, because if he's saying it accidentally yeah. went off, if he knew how to use exactly. a gun. He claimed that after the event, he was not sure what he was doing as he fled. And I mean, I feel like that's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boarding a bus to Texas, getting off in Baltimore.
Very scatterbrained.
A taxi from Baltimore to Georgia.
I can't even believe someone would take him that far.
I know. So, yeah, that's a lot of him hawing around.
Right.
He said he was planning to hang himself, but he was arrested before that. He says, "I didn't intend to do it, but I had no control over myself that day, and I'm truly sorry."
Okay.
Joseph Palapureth was convicted for the murder of Reshma James and Dennis Malusaril. He was sentenced with two consecutive life terms. He also was convicted of attempted murder for shooting Sylvie.
Good.
And received an additional 20 years on top of that.
Nice.
So he won't be eligible for parole until 2153.
Whoa, Nelly. Oh, does that even exist?
It's like when we were young and thinking 2024 was so far away.
I know.
But yeah, it's far away. And that wouldn't that be crazy?
He's going to die and come back from the grave and then serve the next 20 years. So.
There were mixed emotions. Some family and friends wished ill will towards Joseph.
I'll say.
And others said that they would be praying for him.
It's noble.
Shortly after Joseph was convicted and sentenced, he attempted suicide. He went under the care of a psychiatrist, and he was diagnosed with PTSD. His father was an alcoholic, you see.
Oh.
And he was very abusive.
All right.
To his mother and siblings. At one point, he and his siblings had been taken into foster care. And his mother says at that time is when Joseph's behavior changed for the worse. There have been appeals made since Joseph was convicted in 2022. His attorney argued that Joseph's damaging confession should have never made it to trial.
Why? Why?
And should have been suppressed. Well, because it's very damaging.
And from the horse's mouth.
Yes. I mean,
I'm so sorry, but sorry that it was damaging.
Yeah.
I mean,
His attorney argued that because he was out of his mind and could not have knowingly waived his rights to remain silent, he should have not stood trial due to the diminished mental state.
Oh, Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he was mad.
He was mad. Yeah.
So. Okay. All right.
Okay. He argued in his appeal that jurors were not properly instructed on passion provocation. Passion provocation manslaughter carries a 5 to 10 year prison term, while murder carries 30 years to life. So, his attorney contends that Joseph was insane on the morning of November 23rd, 2008, when he loaded 2 guns into his Jeep Wrangler and drove to the church looking for Reshma.
Mm-hmm.
In his petition to the New Jersey Supreme Court, his attorney wrote that Joseph had a long history of being treated for mental illness. Growing up in India, he had several hospitalizations, apparently.
Okay.
Which, I mean, the family was warned he had behavioral issues.
Yep.
The defense initially pursued an insanity plea and hired a psychiatrist to evaluate him, but the doctor never produced a report. And the doctor said he needed more documentation of Joseph's treatment in India. However, records from India were never produced.
Oh, yeah.
So kudos to that psychiatrist for not just, you know, he wanted to make thorough.
No, I need to review those records.
Yeah. So that nixed the insanity defense before trial even started. It was said that there was ample evidence that Joseph was cognizant of his actions, noting that he drove for 5 days from California to New Jersey. This would have been about 3,100 miles.
Yeah.
That's a long way to travel. He had plenty of time to think about what he was doing.
Exactly. He took the weapons with him.
He made the decision to take the weapons with him.
He bought more ammo on the way.
Yes. He made the decision to keep going towards the scene.
Yeah.
He rented a room. He conducted surveillance of his wife for 3 weeks.
That makes me feel sick that she was going about her business and he was hiding in the bushes somewhere, watching her every move.
Disgusting. Yeah. And then he followed her to the church. This was not an accident.
No. And he wasn't insane because he walked in that church and tried to get her to come with him.
Yes.
And when that didn't work. So if he was insane, he would have just went in guns blazing.
Right.
And pointed it at her and said, come with me now.
Right.
No.
So the appeals panel rejected all his arguments and upheld his convictions and sentence. Sylvie's son, Jacob, spoke to the court of how his mother and father had planned to retire and travel the world before the shooting left her in a wheelchair. Now, he says it's difficult for her to move from one room to the other.
Blessed be. Oh, it's terrible.
Dennis's cousin said he was loved by all. His cousin said, I wanted to be just like him.
Oh.
Dennis was an engineer. He was a webmaster for the church and a very loving and caring person who always reached out to others and served both his family and church in many ways. As a member, he was always doing services for the church and helping with administrative tasks, sending out news updates, and always looking to help or do what he could in all situations. He wasn't a stranger to anyone, and he had so much empathy and concern for others. Dennis's parents agreed to donate his organs. And 5 people received a life-saving organ from him. His heart, lungs, kidneys, and pancreas. His mother stated to the court, he not only gave up his life helping someone on that fateful day, he gave the ultimate gift of life.
Oh, I love it.
One Sunday, all 5 organ recipients attended church with his family.
Wow.
They worshiped together in the very church where evil showed its face.
Wow.
These recipients were able to say thank you for the precious gift. So what was meant for evil was turned for good. His parents created a fund in Dennis's name to benefit other youth. It's called Dennis John Memorial Education Fund, and the fund will award scholarships to deserving individuals who are financially unable to pay for school. In addition, the fund will also award a scholarship to one graduating high school senior from within their church annually. The award will be presented to a senior who not only shows a strong academic performance, but also best exemplifies Dennis's spirit of service to the church and community. Aww. So this is what gets me in such tragedy when life throws you a curveball, when there's so much uncertainty. How are you going to react? And his family did so beautifully with what they were dealt.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very powerful.
Yeah. So that's all I have.
Wow. I have so many thoughts. Just like, I don't want to talk about Joseph.
Yeah,
that's just amazing that Dennis had a lasting impact, probably a larger impact than he would have made
in
life.
Yes.
If he had continued living, not to say he wouldn't have done great things,
because he was already at 24
already doing amazing things and serving others. But wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for telling their story. I've never heard her name, his name.
Yeah, there was not. I think there was just a few things that I could find, but yeah.
Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
All right, let's do it.
See you next week, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs, or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Hey, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.